Well, hey, I'm glad that you are joining us indoors for our service. I'm glad that you're here. And I gave everyone a cheat sheet this morning because we're going to be going to a couple of different places in the Bible, and I thought it might be easier if we had it all in one location. So here are the notes for this morning. And we are in Bad Religion, week 5. We are looking at these 7 woes of Jesus, these critiques that Jesus makes against the religious establishment of the time. And this week is called Swallowing Camels, because that sounds like a great sermon title. Now, you know, I put all these Bible verses, but I didn't actually put the verse that we're looking at this morning, and I didn't actually bring my Bible, so I have to go digital here and use my phone. So let's just jump right into this. We're going to be in Matthew chapter 23, verse 23. And I'll say this as we get started. This sermon, it comes from a mixture of a bunch of my thoughts and then also a sermon that I heard way, way many years ago that I took some notes on because I thought it was just absolutely incredible. And that actually was kind of the impetus for doing this series all these years later. So this is my material mixed in with some material by Rob Bell also in a sermon that he did probably like 10 years ago. And this one has always stuck with me. So here we are, Matthew 23, verse 23. Woe to you, teachers of the law and Pharisees, you hypocrites! You give a tenth of your spices, mint, dill, and cumin, but you have neglected the more important matters of the law. Justice, mercy, and faithfulness. You should have practiced the latter without neglecting the former. You blind guides, you strain out a gnat, but you swallow a camel. Anyone else have that problem? You strain out gnats, but you swallow camels? They kind of make their way through? Yeah, I see a couple of you. You're like, yeah, I hate when that happens. Ugh, so frustrating. Now, when Jesus offers this, again, I mean, this is harsh. Harsh. You blind guides, you hypocrites. I mean, he is not trying to make any friends here. He is just, I mean, he is going right for the jugular here with this one. And what's really important for us in understanding what Jesus is saying is we need to take a look back throughout the Bible, especially the Old Testament, and some other stories of Jesus in order to consider the history so that we can see the fullness of all that Jesus is saying here and what it means for us today in our lives. Because that's always the point. We read the Bible, we hear stories about back then, what happened many years ago, but then we have to pull it into the 21st century. What does it mean for us today? So how do these words of Jesus, spoken 2,000 years ago, what do they mean for us? How do they apply for us in our lives today? So let's first talk about this idea of tithing. Notice Jesus said, you set aside a tenth. You give a tenth of all of your spices. And Jesus is, he's affirming the Pharisees, the religious teachers. He says, you guys are doing great. Your zealousness for the law, it's awesome. You guys truly love God. You're following the law. You're adhering to the law. You're giving a tenth of all that you have to God because that's what the law says. And you want to honor God not only with your life, but with all of your possessions. So we could say that these religious leaders, it's great what they're doing. They want to follow how it is that God has been commanding, teaching them to live. So let's flip back to Deuteronomy chapter 14, verse 22. Way, way back in the beginning of the Torah, the giving of the law. It says here, be sure to set aside a tenth of all that your fields produce every year. Oftentimes, when we think about tithe, we think about offering, we think about money. We have an offering box in the back table, and we think, oh, okay, so I'm to give a tenth of what I make. But what the law actually established way, way back in the day is that it's not just money, but it's all of your possessions. The things that you produce, the things that your land produces. And so the religious leaders, they're going to the extreme because they don't want to miss out. they don't want to forget something. So they're going to the extreme and they're making sure, because whenever you got to the law, there was all this debate about what actually constituted the things that your fields produced. Mint, dill, sure. Those were self-explanatory. Cumin, meh. Take it or leave it. Some people said, yes, you have to give a tenth of this. Other people said, no, you don't have to give a tenth of this. The religious leaders, they don't want to mess up. So they're making sure that even the questionable items, well, they're also giving a tenth of those items to God as well. So when they're hearing what Jesus is saying here, at first they're like, he's telling us how awesome we are. We're not failing. We're living up to the law. All the rules, all the regulations, all the ways in which God wants us to live, we're not only doing that, but we're going beyond to make sure that we're covering all of our bases. And Jesus is saying, that's great. Awesome. Keep doing that. But then we get to the second part of this critique, the second part of this woe. But, and I'll look at it again here. So much easier when you have a book. I don't know about you, but reading books on Kindle, I just can't do it. I need a physical book in my hand. Reading the Bible on my phone, I can't do it. So you give a tenth of your spices, but you have neglected the more important matters of the law. Jesus' words, the more important matters. You're giving a tenth, but there's some more important things that you're neglecting, like justice and mercy and faithfulness. So let's look at these three words. Let's look at the idea of justice. It comes from the Greek word krino, which means fairness, means equity. It's all right there in your notes. It means rightness. It goes all the way back to an Old Testament idea known as mishpat, which my seminary professor, Old Testament professor, said mishpat is probably the central theme of the Old Testament, and then he made it even larger, although he was speaking out of his realm, right? He was an Old Testament professor, but he said justice, mishpat, it's one of the central themes of the entire Bible. It shows up again and again and again. In the Old Testament, this word shows up more than 200 times just in the Old Testament. If a word shows up that often, that's saying something. There's something about this word, there's something about this idea that is central to the entire story that God is trying to tell. Let's start all the way back in the beginning. We'll go to Deuteronomy chapter 10. Speaking about God, verse 18, God executes justice for the fatherless and the widow and loves the sojourner, giving him food and clothing. Who does God execute justice for? Those at the bottom, the vulnerable, the left out, those who haven't received a fair allotment in life, those who have been cast to the side, those who are just struggling to make it. You know, sometimes in the world we live in, we look at those who are just struggling to make it, and we think, what did they do wrong? What put them in that position? Why are they struggling? They must have messed up. I mean, even throughout the New Testament, you see people asking Jesus, hey, why is that person sick? Why are they blind? Was it their fault? Was it their parents' fault? Like, we live in a world, and this has been going on for thousands of years, we live in a world where we think if there's something bad that's happening, someone who's at the bottom, they must have done something wrong, or one of their parents must have done something wrong. But yet what we see here all the way back when the law is given, when God is showing people what does it mean to follow God, we hear that God is a God who executes, delivers justice for those who are at the bottom, those who have lost out, those who don't have access to some of the things that we all just take for granted from time to time. But God is on the lookout for those who have been passed over. And then let's flip forward a little bit. if you had a Bible, we'd be flipping forward to Ecclesiastes chapter 5, verse 8. If you see the poor oppressed in a district and justice and rights denied, do not be surprised at such things. It's kind of a sad commentary, is it not? Yeah, if you see people being oppressed, if you see people's rights being stripped from them, don't be surprised. Don't be surprised. Does that kind of make your heart sink a little bit? Don't be surprised by this. For one official is eyed by a higher one, and over them both are others higher still. The increase from the land is taken by all. The king himself profits from the fields. What's being said here is that when rights, justice, goods, wages are denied people, it's those at the top who are exploiting the poor. Don't be surprised by this. This has been going on. Ecclesiastes, we're talking way before the time of Jesus. Thousands and thousands of years, we've lived in a world, in a system, where those at the top keep going after more and more and more. And whoever gets stepped on, whoever loses along the way, whoever loses access, or whoever isn't given fairness or equity, whoever isn't treated rightly, it's those at the top who are making a system like that possible. Don't be surprised by this. I mean, think about it. There's a huge movement right now in our country, in our world, for everyone to receive fair wages, for everyone to receive the things that we as humans all deserve. It shouldn't be surprising that this struggle still exists. But the struggle for fairness, God is right in the middle of that struggle. And as God's people, we're called to be a voice. We're called to be people who call out the unfairness, the exploitation. We're called to be people who give of ourselves, give up some of our rights so that others can have things that they need to survive and thrive in life. And then Isaiah 28, God is speaking through the prophet Isaiah, verse 17, speaking about God, I will make justice the measuring line. I mean, this one tells it all, does it not? How does God judge a society? By how just a society is. How do we typically judge a society? By how wealthy it is. How much money? What's our GDP? But yet, how does God judge a society? By how all people are treated. And a society that treats all people fairly and as equal, that doesn't have a totem pole system or a caste system, but rather where all people are on an equal level. That, according to God, is a society that is flourishing and a society that is thriving. So how are we doing as a society? Do we have some work to do? This justice that God desires to see for all people, that God desires to see executed, delivered throughout the entire world, well, we have some work to do. The religious leaders, yeah, they made sure that they were getting the tenth. They probably had a measuring cup out. Okay, here's 10. Now let me get 1/10 of this, and I'm going to give this down to the smallest spice. But at the same time, they weren't as concerned for the poor, for those who were passing through their land, who were homeless, the sojourner. Rather, they were saying, well, I don't care about them, but as long as I'm doing my part, as long as I'm making sure that down to the smallest spice, I'm giving a tenth, well, then me and God, we're okay. But they weren't concerned about the larger society and those who are at the edges, at the margins of society. And then let's look at this second word here, mercy. Ilios is the Greek word. It means compassion, active pity, not just, oh, I pity them, then you go home and binge Netflix, but rather active pity, which is getting your hands dirty, action, doing something about the plight of another person. Familiar passage, Luke chapter 10, parable of the Good Samaritan. At the end of Jesus telling this parable, he asks those who are listening, which of these three, the ones who were passing by, a few just kept on going, the religious leaders kept on going, which I remember a couple months back, Pastor Mitch gave an online sermon throwing me under the bus, saying I was one of those religious leaders that just passed on by, which we had words after, of course. But which of these three do you think was a neighbor to the man who fell into the hands of the robber? Well, the expert in the law replied, well, the one who had mercy on him. It was the person who stopped, who paid for the bills, who didn't continue on his way. Like, yeah, his Chipotle order was ready at 5, and it was 5:05, but he said, it's okay if it gets cold. I'm going to take care of this man here who's on the side of the road. I'm going to put him up in a hotel. I'm going to give from my bank account so that he can be healed and so that he can have food and shelter. So that's the one who had mercy. And Jesus told him, go and do likewise. Notice, there's an action word here, go. Go and do likewise. When you see someone who is struggling, when you see someone who is having a difficult time, maybe they can't pay the bills, maybe it's someone who's lonely and they don't have anyone else to talk with. When you see someone who feels left out, go. Go. Show mercy, compassion. Don't just pass right on by them. Don't be more concerned for your own welfare than you are for the person who is struggling on the side of the road. And then here's another Jesus quote, which is always a good thing to quote Jesus, is it not? Matthew chapter 9, you're never going to go wrong quoting Jesus. Matthew 9, verse 13, go and learn what this means. I desire mercy. What does God desire? Mercy, compassion, not sacrifice. Think about that. Sometimes we think about going to church as a sacrifice. Sometimes we think giving to the church is a sacrifice. And sure, it's all a sacrifice. Yeah, I get it. But what is it that God truly desires, even more than a sacrifice? Something that we can physically do with our hands? God desires something that goes deeper into our hearts. Mercy. Where does mercy come from? It comes from within. When we're moved within, because we see something that isn't right. We see someone hurting. We see someone in pain, someone struggling, and we feel it in our heart. You ever watch a movie and you can just feel it's like something is pulling on your heart for whatever reason it happens to be? Or maybe you have a friend and your heart, right? We even use this phrase, my heart goes out to them. Mercy comes from within. That's the part that God desires, is that we're moved from within, and then it forces our hands to do something because we can't do anything different. We have to do something about what we see in front of us. So when Jesus critiques the religious leaders, he's saying, you're missing the action piece. Again, you have your tithing down. That's great. That's great. But you're missing the plight of your neighbor and getting your hands dirty, rolling up those sleeves, and helping those who are in need of help. And then let's look at this third word, faithfulness. It's the Greek word pistis, and it means trust. It means confidence. What Jesus is saying here, he's saying, you have not been faithful to who you have been called to be. We've been looking all the way back in the beginning of the Old Testament with the giving of the law. With the giving of the law, what God was doing, he's saying, hey, here's what it means to be my people. Here's what it means to be people of God. Here's the true identity that I want you to live into. Here's how to be fully human. And we've seen multiple parts of the law showing about how it's about our heart, it's about justice, it's about mercy. And Jesus is saying, you've been faithful in some aspect, but again, you're missing the larger picture. You're not being fully faithful to what it means to be the people of God. you're not being fully faithful to your calling. As a follower of Jesus, as a believer in God, even as a human being. Because simply being human means to show care and concern for others. It's coming to the realization that we are all in this together, that we're all connected. As we've seen over this past year, what happens in one part of the world affects all of us in every part of the world. We're realizing we're more connected than ever. And this realization is continuing to grow. We've known this, but we're becoming more and more aware of it by the year. And Jesus is saying, hey, you've missed the heart of the law. You've done everything between you and God, okay, and you're getting that right. You're zealous for that aspect, but you're missing the larger picture, which the law was given in order to create a society of justice and fairness and access for all people. So let's break it down a little bit for us. Jesus says here, you should have practiced the latter without neglecting the former. There are two dimensions of spirituality. There's the personal. That's you and God, you and Jesus. The things that you do when no one else is watching. And that matters, right? Jesus affirms, yes, that deeply matters. That's important. You should have practiced the latter without neglecting the former. So what you do with your time, how you spend your time, it matters. What you do with your money, it matters. The things that you put into your head, it matters. The conversations that you have with others, they matter. Cultivating your relationship with God, it matters. It all matters, yes. But then there's another dimension of spirituality. It's the outward dimension. The things that we've been talking about here this morning, compassion, mercy, seeking justice. And Jesus is saying, what he actually says is, it's the more important matters of the law. I mean, these are Jesus' words. See, oftentimes we get hung up, especially when we live in such an individualized culture as we live in today. Church becomes all about us and God. Religion becomes about us and God. But what Jesus is saying here is, when that happens, we're missing the point. Because our spirituality, it can't just stay within us. It can't stay within our little, now we have a 6-foot sphere around us, right? It can't stay within this 6-foot sphere, but rather our religion is to compel us outward, so that we roll up our sleeves, so that we be people who are an active force in the world. There was a song I remember. Maybe some of you remember this song. When I was in high school, I think there was a band called Audio Adrenaline. And they had a song called Hands and Feet. I want to be your hands. I want to be your feet. Oh, man. High school or youth group, Christian youth group songs. But it's true. It's true, right? We are to be the hands and the feet of Jesus. And Jesus is saying, hey, your spices. Yeah. Yeah, you got that. The things your field produces. You're great at that. But let's get those hands dirty. Take the gloves off. Let's go get involved in the great, important matters of the world. I love, it gets to the end here, right? You strained out a gnat, but you swallowed a camel. And this is like the final dagger that he just delivers. We look at Leviticus chapter 11. And this is about cleanliness laws, talking about insects. When an insect or a gnat or whatever it happens to be, one of them dies and falls on something. So let's say you have a mosquito, and this happens oftentimes if we're on our back porch, if we're outside with a mimosa in the morning, or maybe, I don't know what your preferred drink is in the afternoon or evening, but imagine a mosquito comes by and it falls on something, or maybe it's on your plate, right? Memorial Day, it's a time to barbecue, to be outside. Not sure if that'll happen, but let's say you're outside, a mosquito falls on your plate. Well, that article, or maybe it's your fork, whatever it happens to be, it's going to be unclean. So you cannot use that fork. You can't have that plate anymore. You got to throw it all out because now it's unclean because the mosquito has died and now it is contaminating the entire space, that entire article, the thing that is there. So whether it's made of wood, cloth, hide, or sackcloth, same thing with your clothes too, right? Mosquito falls on your shirt, whew, it's time to go change. And then you got to set that aside for a while so that it can be clean again. Put it in water, right? It'll be unclean till evening, and then it'll be clean again after. So there's a process, a way to make things clean again. Now, if one of them falls into a clay pot, everything in it will be unclean, and you must break the pot. Pretty extreme, is it not? Something falls in your clay pot, break the pot. You can't keep it anymore. Everything in it will be unclean. You must break. Okay, any food you are allowed to eat that has come into contact with water from any such pot is unclean, and any liquid that is drunk from such a pot is unclean. Okay, here's the really interesting thing. Remember I told you that there was all these nuances about the law, and some people would say you got to do this and this. There's all these different interpretations. So when Leviticus 11 was being interpreted, the consensus was anything that was smaller than a lentil, you didn't have to worry about it. So whatever's smaller than a lentil, don't worry. So I guess a mosquito, probably a bad illustration, because a mosquito is smaller than a lentil, so you'd be okay. What's the size of a gnat compared to a lentil? Smaller, right? So according to the interpretation of this law, did a gnat really have to be strained out? No. Again, remember, religious leaders, they're going to the extreme. They're living in fear. They're afraid if they don't follow the law and follow it to the extreme, they're going overboard here. You ever do this in your relationship with God? You go to the extreme because there's this fear. If I get this wrong, I'm going to cover all my bases. Because if I get this wrong, or if I'm not good enough, if I don't do enough, well, then God's going to be upset with me. And Jesus is saying, you go to the extreme. You strain out a gnat. That's great. That's awesome. But in the midst, you're swallowing a camel. You're missing the larger, more important matters of the law. What were they concerned about? Themselves and God, but they didn't care about their neighbors. They didn't care about others who were hurting in the world. And Jesus is saying, man, the thing that God desires from all of us is that we would be people of healing, of justice, that we would take our relationship with God, our relationship with Jesus, and that it would compel us outward into the world. It wouldn't just stay with us, but rather it would send us, go. It would change our hearts. See, the thing is that the religious leaders, their hearts weren't being changed. They were all in their heads. And Jesus is saying, your hearts, they're so far from God. Don't worry about the gnats. You know what? With your spices, honestly, yeah, keep tithing. But like, you don't have to get a knife to even the whole thing out. You know, when I make my coffee in the morning, I get a scoop and I just kind of scoop and then I shake it out. Sometimes a little lower, sometimes a little higher. I don't get a knife and scrape the top off to make sure that, okay, one cup, I'm good. You know, some days a little more, some days a little less. I think that's okay. I think that's all right. What does God care about? How we show up in the world with our lives, with our actions. So sometimes we hear a sermon like this, we read a verse like this, and we get overwhelmed because there's a lot in the world that is broken, is there not? And it's overwhelming at times. It's overwhelming. I mean, that verse from Ecclesiastes, don't be surprised by this. I mean, sometimes that can just paralyze you. Don't be surprised. Great, what's the point? Why even try? Why even do anything? The issues are so large. There's so much pain. There's so much that's wrong in the world. Why even try? Can I even move the dial at all? So here's a question for us. What's your one thing? What's your one thing? Pick one thing. Pick one issue. Pick one issue to care about. Pick one person to care about. Is there someone that you come across, someone you know, someone in your path, and you know they're hurting? Can you reach out to them this week? Can you give them a call? Can you be moved with compassion for one person this week. Or maybe it's an issue. Maybe there's something that is just pulling on your heart. And you know deep within that, man, there's something wrong about this. I have a friend right now who is applying for jobs at World Vision because he thinks that families, kids around the world who don't have enough food, medicine, clothing, education, and shelter is wrong. And he says, I want to do something about it. And so he's applying for a job at World Vision now so that he can do something about this situation around the world. That's the issue that he cares about. Is there one issue that you can give time, money, your voice to? Is there one thing? So we have to always break it down into the smaller pieces. Otherwise, it's overwhelming. So what's your one thing this week? What's the one step that you can take? One step. That's it. Don't look five steps down the road. You take the one step, and then you see what happens. And then maybe there's another step. Maybe that's 6 months down the line. That's okay. What's the one step? And for us here at Awaken, this year has been crazy in the sense, I don't know if crazy encapsulates, can you know, capture the totality of all that's gone on over the past year, but one of the things that saddens me is that we haven't been able to engage in some of the normal activities that we have practiced over the years. So the Walk for Water, where we raise money for clean water, partnering with Harlem Grown for a community garden, the times that we've been in here stuffing t-shirts to be delivered to homeless shelters in Westchester. And so we are looking to get back to some of those practices. We want to be involved with some of the great issues that are going on in our world to show others they're not forgotten and that through our lives that they would come to the realization that they would see and tangibly know that they are loved by God and that they're not forgotten and that our lives would show this through our actions. So this week, don't strain out gnats while you swallow camels. Pick your one thing and go from there. Let me pray for us. God, I thank you for these challenging words of Jesus. God, these words that have challenged followers of Jesus now for 2,000 years. And I thank you that we can read these words today and that, God, we can still be challenged by what Jesus said. God, I pray that we would practice the personal dimension of our spirituality without neglecting the outward dimension. God, I pray that the personal dimension, God, our relationship with God, God, our pursuit of Jesus would compel us outward. God, that we wouldn't be concerned simply with us and Jesus, but that we would be people of active compassion, people of mercy. God, so show each of us this week, what does that mean for us? Show us that one step, that one issue, or that one person. And then, God, give us the opportunity, give us the courage to take that step this week. And may you meet us in that moment. So, God, may you stir our hearts. God, may we be people who seek after justice, fairness. God, may we be people who care for some of the great hurt that exists in our world today. We ask all this in the name of Jesus. Amen.